voluptuous mermaid. Even though long blonde tresses artfully concealed Hannah's naked breasts, rumors about the film and its subject matter had triggered anxiety among board members. Finally, Walker had called Miller. "I'm hearing a lot of things about Splash. Can I see it?" "Sure," Miller replied. After the screening, Walker called Miller into his office. "That's one hell of a film," Walker said. "Now if we can just take out six or seven scenes." Miller was exasperated. "Card? You just don't get it." Miller mentioned his frustrations to Eisner, shaking his head at Walker's reaction. When Walker joined the meeting, the atmosphere still seemed tense. Walker seemed amenable to the idea of hiring Eisner as president, but his demeanor was nonetheless cool. After they firmed up the terms of his potential employment, Walker said with a note of disdain in his voice, "I suppose your kind of people would need a press release." Eisner stared at him. Was "your kind of people" a reference to Eisner's being Jewish? Disney had long been rumored to harbor a streak of anti-Semitism, but Eisner thought not. Rather, he sensed that to Walker, Eisner represented Hollywood, the studio culture from which Disney had always stood apart. To Walker, Hollywood was filled with people who were vulgar, publicity-seeking, and flashy, whatever their religion or lack thereof. "You are a public company," Eisner replied, "so, yes, you will need a press release." When he left the meeting, he told his wife, "I don't think they're ready for me." This, at least, is the version of events Eisner later published in his autobiography and recounted in interviews with me. Ron Miller, however, maintains that this account is fiction and says that Eisner never met with Walker and that Walker never said anything about a press release or made any reference to "your people." The rest of the account, he says, roughly corresponds to events that Miller described to Eisner on the phone. Whether or not the meeting Eisner described ever occurred, Walker finally gave in to Miller's arguments on Eisner's behalf. They summoned a business affairs executive to iron out the details. "We're calling Eisner right now, and we're making him president and COO," Miller announced. The executive was shocked. "You can't do that. You've got to give that job to somebody from within." Walker slammed his fist down on the desk. "That's it," he said. "We're not doing it." After Eisner and Jane arrived home, the phone rang. "It's not going to work," a dejected Miller said. "Card said we can't do this." Miller felt vindicated when Splash opened in March 1984 and was a big hit, grossing more than $69 million, a new Disney record for a live-action film. But it was too late to change the perception of Disney as undervalued and badly managed. The same day that Splash opened in theaters, Roy Disney sent a short letter to the company marked personal and confidential. "I hereby resign as a director of Walt Disney Productions." He and Stanley Gold had decided to wage a campaign to take control of Disney from outside the boardroom. Less than 3 weeks later, corporate raider Saul Steinberg revealed that he owned more than 6% of Disney's shares and planned to buy up to 25%, formally putting Disney in play and vulnerable to a hostile takeover. After the board bought off Steinberg by paying him green mail and Disney's shares plunged, Roy raised his holdings to more than 5%. As rumors circulated that Roy himself might make a takeover bid or mount a